Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Lori Walsh, sitting in today for Kara Hetland. And now white nose syndrome has been discovered in bats in South Dakota. What does that mean for the bat population and conservation, and even for you as you go out on your next hike? We're joined now today by Silke Kempema. She is a wildlife biologist with the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks Department. Silke, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yep. Thanks, Lori.
All right. Thanks for being here. Also with us, Kimberly Dickerson. She's with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She's the White Nose Syndrome Coordinator for the Mountain Prairie Region. Kimberly, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's start with you, Silke, and give us an idea of what exactly White Nose Syndrome is in bats. It's a little fungus, right?
Right. Actually, the fungus that causes white nose syndrome, Pseudogymnoascus destructans, is a fungus that was discovered in New York in 2006. And what the fungus actually does, it affects bats that hibernate in caves or mines. Both hibernating bats and this fungus like kind of cold, damp environments. The fungus infects the bats' skin, especially the wing membrane, and what it actually does is disrupts the bats during hibernation. The disease is called white nose syndrome because of the white fuzzy fungus, I guess, that was found on, or that can be found on the muzzle, the wings, and the ears of the bat. And the physiological disruptions that occur within the bat's body arouse it from hibernation, and it causes it to use up precious fat resources, and that increases its chances of mortality.
Oh. Kimberly, is it, it's new in South Dakota? Has it been here before? Have we been kind of holding it at bay? How significant is the discovery of it in the state?
Well, it has been moving steadily westward since 2006 when it was discovered in New York, and this is the first detection of the white nose syndrome fungus in bats from South Dakota. It has been detected previously in Nebraska and Kansas, but not in South Dakota until this spring.
How fast does it spread, Kimberly? Like, once it's here, how big of a... how urgent is the situation?
Well, the West has a different situation than what occurs in the East for most hibernating bats. Hibernating bats in the East use a lot of caves, and they have large caves where there are large populations. In the West, although South Dakota does have some very large caves, bats tend to be in smaller populations, so it's difficult at this point to predict how fast it might move across our states, but they're still researching where a lot of bats do hibernate in the western states, just because the number of caves are more limited.
Silke, for people who are tuning in, and let's put this in perspective as far as what bats actually do for the South Dakota ecosystem, because some people are, not a huge fan of bats and might think it doesn't matter, but it really does. Tell us why.
Right. Bats serve an important ecological function in that they consume night flying insects. So kind of like the version of the nighttime version of birds. In addition to that ecological function, it's been estimated that billions of dollars have been saved from the agricultural economy, at least in other parts of the country, from that predation of insects. And then even in addition to that function, bats as a group are very unique in that they're the only group of mammal that has true flight. They use echolocation to find their prey and find their way at night. And the one thing I think that a lot of people don't really understand is that the only similarity that a bat really has, at least the bats that live in South Dakota, that these bats really have with rodents, say like mice, is their size. Contrary to this small size, bats are relatively long-lived, and they don't have high reproductive rates. So they typically only have one pup a year. And so any type of threat or additional threat to the bat populations, especially the ones, the species that live in South Dakota, are more of a concern because of that limited reproductive rate and the longevity of the species that we have here.
Hmm. Kimberly, what's next as far as response? So the early detection of the fungus has been made through collaborative efforts. And what happens now?
The Fish and Wildlife Service has been providing many dollars for research into finding ways of treating the disease and offsetting some of the losses of bats. We have been working with USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, that is working on developing an actual vaccine for bats. It's very similar to their work that they have done to vaccinate the endangered black-footed ferrets against the plague that is carried by fleas that bite the prairie dogs that they eat. So there is the biggest thing right now is with vaccination development, but there's also other research going on that we have been working on funding. Folks are looking at some kind of probiotic for bats, such as we would think of it in the human world as a bat yogurt, but incorporating some good bacteria for the bats to help them fight off the fungus. They are also looking at a variety of antifungal agents. And then there's also some research being done in the actual treating of caves, such as short bursts of specific wavelengths of UV light, looking at a fungus neutralizing spray, kind of like what you would think of in your bathroom as one of those little timed sprays that goes off every now and then.
Okay, yeah.
And there's also some other bacteria that they are looking at putting into caves that inhibit fungal growth, very similar to what they have found on bacterium that slows ripening of fruit. Many of these, well, I shouldn't say many of them, but some of these treatments will be tested this year in Texas. And so we're hoping that that will provide some positive response for the bats.
Silke, tell us what you know. What we need to know in South Dakota. People are going to want to know if it's contagious, but then they also want to know how can they help. I mean, does it transfer to humans, I guess, is what they will want to know, and then what we can do to help here in South Dakota. What are your thoughts there?
Sure. First and foremost, it's not known to be a human or livestock health concern. In terms of what people in South Dakota can do just for bat conservation in general is, you know, number one, be more informed, you know, try and find out a little bit more. But in this specific case, especially when we're talking about bats that hibernate in caves or mines, know that this is a very sensitive period during their life or their annual life cycle. Mm-hmm. And so try and stay out of caves and mines. Disturbance in caves and mines can be fairly detrimental to bat populations. It increases their chances of arousing from hibernation and using those, you know, important bat reserves that they have to get them through the winter. Arousals are normal during hibernation, but increased rates of arousal can be detrimental to a bat in the hibernating population. You know, just be more informed. If you see a sick or dying or dead bat, contact one of your wildlife agency offices, either South Dakota Game Fish and Parks or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or, you know, even Forest Service or National Park Service offices, and, you know, let them know of your concern. You know, there's other reasons other than white nose where you might find a bat that's out of place, or maybe a sick or dying bat. But, you know, hands off. You know, the best advice is just to kind of leave wildlife alone. They kind of like to be by themselves anyways. But also for human health concerns as well. Just if you find something, contact a resource agency and let them know. Now, caves and mines, or at least caves, are places where people like to explore and recreate, so cavers, spelunkers, things of that nature. There are decontamination protocols and that the Fish and Wildlife Service has outlined for folks to reduce the spread of those fungal spores, and those can be found on the whitenosesyndrome.org website, and that website is a really great depository of a plethora of information regarding white-nose syndrome and bats.
Hmm. Again, that's whitenosesyndrome.org, and my guests have been Silke Kempema, she's a wildlife biologist with the South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks Department, and Kimberly Dickerson, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service White-Nose Syndrome Coordinator for the Mountain Prairie Region. Silke, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Kimberly, great information. Thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.